Hello, and welcome to Hard Fried History, a hybrid history
and comedy
podcast run by two aspiring entertainers.
Podcast, it's more of a rant, really.
That have failed at almost everything else.
I don't fail because I don't try, so there.
We appreciate you checking us out, and if you want to see extra content, follow us on Instagram or give us a like on Facebook at Hard Fried History.
Subscribe to us on YouTube or tell us we're full of shit on Twitter at HFH Podcast.
Feel like going that extra mile? Give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Or wherever you're listening, and leave us a flattering, a glowing review.
And of course, tell your friends, family, and even people you don't like about us.
That's right. Again, thank you for listening, and without further ado, the episode. Welcome. Here we are. I based all of this on the biography of Angela Davis published in 1974. So immediately when she got out of prison, she started working on it. And then she even says in the preface that she's like, she doesn't know if she wanted to write it immediately or if then was the time to write it. But there was so much clamor for it that she was like, all right, I guess I got to write my story out now. So that's what we'll be talking about today. Up until she, I don't want to give any spoilers. Our figure today is a woman who lived through such seminal events as the Cuban Missile Crisis, the assassination of both JFK and MLK, a woman who helped build the Black Liberation Movement, one of the first people, generally, to use Marxism as a critique of entrenched American racism, Angela Davis, born January 26, 1944 in Birmingham, Alabama.
She's like one of the first, like within that like civil rights generation. But wouldn't you argue as from like the Marcus Garvey stuff, you have all those people from like Marcus Garvey 20s era shit where they're just like, yeah,
that also is true.
Socialism.
That is true. Yeah. So maybe not one of the first is like, she kind of doubled down on it or like built on that intellectual tradition to say the least.
Of course. Yeah. No. In the new generation, it kind of was the first. Yeah. Yeah. It's like almost articulated through the Black Panther, like post Black Panther.
Yeah. Cross pollinating.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
One of the earliest memories that Angela Davis has is in spring of 1949, there's an explosion that destroys the home of a Black family called the Daiberts is the last name of the family. They had bought a home in the quote-unquote white side of town, and miraculously and thankfully, the family is okay, but the home is absolutely destroyed. And bombings are so frequent in the neighborhood that Davis grew up in, their neighborhood is known as Dynamite Hill.
Yeah, man, because somebody taught the KKK how to use dynamite.
It's probably the
point,
FBI, honestly. Which is honestly, probably FBI classes getting in the KKK and be like, listen, I got some real training. I don't mind giving you a few lessons on the sly, all right?
Look, Judas and the Black Messiah now, the movie about Fred Hampton. And just, this is for everybody listening. Anybody shows up with C4 or any type of explosives anywhere, they're the feds. That's the FBI.
They got the hookup, man.
Yeah, who I don't have a C4 guy.
I don't have a C4 guy. I got a lot of guys. I have a couple guys.
Yeah.
I know people with more guys than I do, and I don't even know a friend of a friend of a friend of a cousin of a friend with a C4 connection.
I know way more guys than you. I have so many guys. I have a sand guy. I have a shoe guy. I have a guy. But I know nobody who has dynamite.
No, nobody with dynamite.
And I take pride in that statement.
Good. I mean, I'm glad we're doing okay, right? 1950 to 1955, so kind of her early childhood, she spends a part of most summers in New York because her mother's getting her master's in education at NYU, and she's kind of like dimly aware of McCarthyism. Like one of her friend's dad is arrested, mm-hmm. and she doesn't really know why or understand why, but it's in the back of her mind that like my friend's dad had to go underground, you know? And that's a little, that's not every kid can say that, you know?
It's an interesting thing that like a lot of these people like usually like we talk about like kind of thinkers or people activists, a lot of these people like have come from like relatively like decent off families.
Yeah, she describes like herself as the not so poor. So there's yeah. like families doing way worse, and that's one of the things she becomes aware of when she goes to mm-hmm. school. She's like, there's families, there are poor families, and then we were not so poor. We were doing okay. You know, my dad could buy us shoes.
Yeah, because when you're working double shifts at McDonald's, mm-hmm. you only have time to contemplate how Marxism could transform your
not a whole lot. Not a whole, just like, thinking about like, what we need to do is collectivize as you're like frying fries, you know, and not a whole lot of that.
That's a, yeah.
At least not in the 50s. I don't know about today, you know,
No, I think there's those ideas, you're not seeking out those ideas. If those ideas are brought to you, then you apply. Oh,
yeah, that's true. That's true.
Learning but about them, that's the difficult part.
Not a whole lot of time to seek if you're just worried about getting
by.
Yeah. Yeah. So the school she went to in Birmingham is the Carrie A. Tuggle School, and it's run by an all-white board of education. And in her autobiography, she says her history classes are trash. Like the mm-hmm. Civil War is taught as like the war for Southern independence mm-hmm. or the war of Northern aggression. You're like, cool. So you also learned about
I feel like I got a little bit of that in my Texas. History classes in Texas, but it was like the teacher would teach like the like very down like the history book version of it, which was mm-hmm. like not good in itself, mm-hmm. but then she would have her own commentary.
Ah,
you had to ask and be like, "Is this you or this history?"
Yeah, because
you're saying some shit that's wild.
A lot of you never really appreciate it until like I know people who are teachers,
mm-hmm.
like you know contemporaries and shit, and it's just like, oh, a lot of people teach for. It's not all about education. It's not because they love kids sometimes. Sometimes it's not the kids or the learning that they love, you know?
Sometimes their spouse is tired of hearing their bullshit. they just need children to rant
it out. On somebody else, yeah.
Yeah.
So she's learning about some black historical figures because I think the schools are still segregated for a time, not until 1954, of course. And then she's learning about black historical figures because they make a point of that at her school. She does these special projects. She says, quote unquote, in her autobiography, black identity was thrust upon us by the circumstances of oppression. And so she would like do projects on Harriet Tubman and all sorts of other figures. And she loved to read as a child. There was a library in Birmingham that had like a secret entrance where like a black librarian was posted up and they would just hand out books on all sorts of stuff. She read a bunch of stuff like Les Miserables and all sorts of different stuff. 1955 to 1960, Angela Davis enters high school during the Alabama bus boycotts and Rosa Parks and all that stuff. She finishes high school in NYC at the Elizabeth Irwin School and lived in Brooklyn for a time. And when she gets to the Elizabeth Irwin School, her teachers are a little more crunchy. You know, we're on the cusp of the 60s, and so they're kind of doing some more loosey-goosey shit, man. You know, don't call me Professor Birkin Dirk. You can call me Tim, all right, brother? Just call me Tim, man, you know?
There was a time when I was, like, super, like, when I, like, I love music. So I was, like, there's a time when I was super into, like, those old middle of the night, like, remember the 60s, like, mm-hmm. infomercials? Yep. Like, I used to watch those. I used to just watch those, 30 minutes a piece, and just be, like, in. It's like the time before the 60s. There's this time called the beatnik era. Those are the guys who wear like berets and like the snapping and shit. Yeah,
the beret and snapping. Yeah, you nailed it. You know.
Yeah, berets and sunglasses. Like, that's what it is, man.
Just call me Tim, brother. Man. Just call me. What's up, man? Talk to me, man.
Oh my god,
what's going on? Right.
Yeah, the late 50s were trash, all around.
Didn't figure it out yet. You know, paving the way for the 60s, but did not. Not there yet. But naturally, those teachers are a little more left-leaning, right? So she learns about socialism in her history class, and it kind of piques her interest. So she reads more about it, and she reads the Communist Manifesto and all that stuff, and gets furthers her education, you know, extracurricular education, if we want to think about that, because I don't know how much they were teaching that specifically at the school and how much was her seeking that out.
I mean, you got to talk about, if you're talking about like New York in the late 50s, with all those like the greatest generation people, the people who were kids in the 30s or like in teenagers and fought in World War II, then came back and like did all that shit. They were all like pretty much all socialists, like, especially in New York.
The guys who were willing to die for FDR.
Yeah.
You're going to tell me that they were rooting tooting? I don't think
so. Who almost had king-like reverence for FDR.
Yeah. No, like, come on, like, man. No.
Only had one king
daddy, in this country. Daddy Lib FDR? Yeah, that guy?
Yeah,
no.
If FDR was around today, with his like work, like the way he like valued unions because they were his power base, he would be like, Amazon, like the minimum wage isn't going to be $15. It's going to be $25.
It's going to be $25. It's going to be $100 and a and $33. You know,
it's going to be and yes.
Early 1960s, there are the sit-ins and the boycotts are being broadcast on TV and in the newspapers. These are, I think, taking place primarily in the South, or at least those are the ones being broadcasted and publicized. And so Angela Davis is torn between staying, or returning to her family and finishing her studies in New York, because she's separated from it and she feels like she needs to be back there participating in the boycotts and sit-ins and everything. She gets a full scholarship at Brandeis University. I think it's Brandeis University. She starts studying there. And then in June of 1962, she leaves for Europe, because I think her and a couple other friends decided to go to the World Youth Festival in Helsinki. So they just make a Euro trip out of it, naturally. She goes to London, she goes to Paris, she goes to Geneva. And then while in Paris, she's struck by the assaults against Algerians and North Africans living in Paris at the time, because I think the war for Algerian independence is going on, or if it isn't already finished at the time. And so there's like, it's basically the same story as they're in Birmingham, with like racist graffiti being posted up everywhere, and like buildings being bombed and everything, and fear and segregation and all that stuff.
I'm trying to think when that happens. I know it's in the the war,
I don't know when the war ends. I want to say like 61 or 62, but I could be wrong on that.
I know it's the thing about Algeria. That's a super interesting story.
Yeah.
It's about like how France just going around, like, just with this, like, idea that, like, oh, we're just going to keep these colonies. It's incredibly interesting. Uh-huh. It's incredibly interesting, and we should do it later.
Okay, we might be losing Vietnam, but there's no way in hell we're going to lose Algeria.
Yeah,
okay?
It's basically that vibe, and it's like, no, you're going to lose Algeria also, dog.
You're going to lose both, man. Tides are against you, okay?
Yeah, you got to really get the fuck out of here.
You need to colonize on paper now, all right? That's the new name of the game, fellas.
Yeah. It's a whole, yeah. It's a
so
whole
she spends thing. Her third year of college studying in France, and she decides to major in French, and she starts staying at the Bay of Biscay, which I think is either in Spain or border Spain. I don't know the region that is the Bay of Biscay. I think it's like southern France and northern Spain, but this is where she says she's studying.
And one more thing about like Paris and having like Algerians and Africans, in terms of like what, because they invited them there to like work, like to build back up France, from my understanding, and like in like the 50s, like the 40s and 50s, like, so there's like a lot of immigrants that came there.
I didn't know that. That's cool,
from my understanding. Yeah. And then also, like, if you go to Paris now, it's like a lot of cities, like I was surprised how black and how brown Paris was, because it's always presented as a very like French city, but
I just thought it was all berets and snapping, you know what I mean? And
it's a lot of tracksuits.
Okay,
it's a lot of boys in tracksuits. A lot of kids in tracksuits wilding.
Sweet. So September 16th of 1963, while Angela Davis is in school in France, after school, she buys a newspaper and reads about the bombing at the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, in which her friends Carol Robertson, Addie Mae Collins, Denise McNair, and Cynthia Wesley were all killed. And far from viewing it as a historical aberration, she viewed it as more an inevitable escalation, that something like this, given the broader recent history of Birmingham, Alabama, was bound to happen.
Was she, because those girls were like children, from my understanding.
Yeah.
They were like kind of like just like family friends.
Like, I think two of them she mentioned were like her, like fairly close friends. I think Carol and Cynthia might have been a little older.
Yeah. It's a weird, like, you can't, if somebody, like, if you live through like a bombing like that, like an attack, like, I don't know, man. You've already had like the physical attacks of like lynchings and like just violence in general. But like, I don't know, bombings, especially on little girls.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
It's crazy. And, you know, she's grown up having or knowing people who have gone underground and having her neighbors' homes blown up. Like, that's crazy.
So to get involved in any type of liberation movement, I was always in a liberation movement.
Yeah. Speaking of inevitable escalations, right?
Yeah.
November of 1963, of course, she hears of Kennedy's assassination while still in France. And, of course, like throngs of people, Americans and maybe also like non-Americans, they're just throngs of people weeping outside the American embassy in Paris. And Angela Davis mentions having the thought of like, okay, how many tears were shed 3 months ago when the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing took place? You know, how many tears were shed for those girls as opposed to Kennedy?
Not a lot. That's the answer.
Probably not. Yeah.
In America, in the black community, I don't know, maybe with like some white liberal friends, but like, that's about the outcry that happened when Kennedy died. Of course.
1963 to 64, she decides to go to graduate school at Frankfurt University and get her master's in philosophy. And while she's there, she hears about the burgeoning Black Power movement and the activity of Huey Newton, Bobby Seale, and Bobby Hutton. And she arranges to complete her doctorate under this guy, Professor Herbert Marcuse, who had already transferred to the University of California in San Diego. Because she does some additional traveling around like Germany and gets involved with like a socialist student organization there as well. But she's also hearing about what's going on domestically in the U.S. in the 60s. And she's like, I need to go back home. You know, I can't still be in Europe.
Yeah. No, it's like the revolution's happening. And you're like, I get this term paper in.
Yeah.
Like, oh, fuck this, dog. I need to be back out.
Summer of 1963, on her way home, she stops at a conference in London headlined by Herbert Marcuse and Stokely Carmichael, who gave a speech on the dialectics of liberation. And she approaches him after his talk and basically asks, like, how can I get involved? Who should I talk to? Do you know anybody? And he gives her the name of this guy, Tommy J, and an address in Watts.
Yeah.
And this gets into the second phase of her life, which is when she is organizing in Los Angeles. November of 1963, she attends the Black Youth Conference at the Second Baptist Church in Watts and notices really how kind of like fragile unity was at that moment. Like, some people in the movement are more aggressive or militant, and others want like a separate nation for black people within the U.S., and others are more like Garveyists, and they're like, maybe we should just go at it in Africa and everything. Mm-hmm. And then a couple notable organizations, or I think the ones that she's like drawn to, the ones that she mentions, is the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, or SNCC, and SNCC. Of course, the Black Panther Party.
SNCC in the BC in the BPP.
SNCC?
Yeah, they call it SNCC. SNCC.
Okay.
Yeah, this the one that Stokely Carmichael's over. I'm pretty sure he's leading. From my understanding, it worked like, we talk about Martin Luther King Jr. a lot because we like to individualize our history and not talk about it as a collective movement. But like, a lot of the work on the ground as far as protesting is done by like women and like in kids who are in college. And like, SNCC is the organizing, the people who send people into fucking diners to get shit thrown on them. You know what I mean?
Angela Davis naturally falls in with the communists, specifically this guy Franklin Alexander. And Franklin Alexander's whole point, and I think Angela Davis like helps him refine it and gravitates toward it, is Franklin Alexander saying that we need to go beyond the skin analysis to the class analysis, mm-hmm. and starts to mention that like racism is a tool, American racism in particular, it's used as a tool to fracture the working class and prevent us from becoming, or keep us lumping, that is.
That critique you also see with Fred Hampton.
Well, it's also like international. It's always easier to have a scapegoat and just be like, I know you're mad at us about these wage cuts, mm-hmm. but if it's not our fault, man, it's their fault because they were willing to work for less because their situation is a little bit more dire. And it's like, they took our jobs. And it's like, no, but you can all work together and you really have a common struggle with the people who are also being oppressed by the same system that you're being oppressed by. But they just look different. So it's easier.
Oh, yeah. No, it's like, why, like, we're both fighting over this money, these mm-hmm. jobs, mm-hmm. and we're like, we're fighting over scraps when there's a dude who's like making so much money,
yeah,
off of this thing, and it's a fuck.
You guys are fighting over olives, and he's got the whole sub, you know?
Yeah, yeah, no, oh, yeah, of course. I mean. This is you could do an episode just on this critique.
Yeah, I wish I could come up with a better metaphor that didn't relate to sandwiches, but it was the best. It was the best I could do.
I mean, look,
in the
that's
short
fine.
Time we had,
that's fine. Yeah,
it works. Yeah. Early 1968, the BPP and SNCC are negotiating a merger. Davis and some others, they go on to found the LA branch of SNCC. There are divisions between the new organization. Like Stokely Carmichael, initially really not in favor of Marxism because he saw it as kind of like a white man's invention. And then as far as what Davis is doing, she's kind of protesting the arrest of race leaders such as Huey Newton and Rap Brown.
And also we gotta like talk about like LA and what it is at this time, yeah. Because this is LA fresh off like the 65 Watts riots,
mm-hmm.
kind of like. Like, L.A., like, being seen as, like, this place that was, like, a great place for black people to move to from the South, of course, during the Great Migration. Mm-hmm. But then, like, in 65, like, it's because of, like, unemployment and, like, there's a lot of tension, unemployment and police brutality. There's a lot of tension in Watts. And I think we talked about this personally off of, like, what happened is a dude was trying to pull his car over. Like, he was getting arrested. And they're going to impound his car. But he's getting arrested right in front of like his fucking driveway. You know what I mean? Like
yeah,
his mom's driveway.
That sounds familiar.
And they wouldn't let him pull his car into the driveway, from my understanding.
Yeah.
And then that's what kicked it off, because they're like, why are you being such a dick? It's like, is that kind of like just getting pulled over, ask where you're going, what are you doing? Police brutality, getting the shit beat out of you. So like kind of the same, a lot of issues.
A lot of same issues, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, speaking of similar shit.
Yeah.
April 4th, 1968, the Angela Davis and, you know, the world, I guess, hears about the assassination of MLK. And there are protests around the country. She mentioned specifically L.A., NYC, Raleigh, Jackson, Mississippi, and Nashville as, like, mm-hmm. where the riots were the worst. April 5th, 1968, very next day, LBJ, the president, gives orders to the Secretary of Defense to utilize all force necessary to maintain, quote-unquote, law and order.
Yeah.
So you have a highly publicized death of a black man, protests around the country, and then the president calls for law and order.
Yeah.
Look at that, huh?
It's not even a compromise of, like, law and order, and also we're gonna find the guy who did
and
this.
Also justice. It's
always like, no, you guys can't be mad about this.
Nope,
like,
you're not allowed.
Yeah, not allowed.
So the very next day, there are 20 victims of, so the six at this point, there are 20 victims of police repression across the country. SNCC offices get raided, and they go as far at like the day after the raid, they had like pre-cooked a big pot of spaghetti that they would eat the next day. And, you know, they go and they see the raid happened, and then they decide they're hungry, and so they start serving the spaghetti, and like one dude, before anybody really chows down, is like, holy shit, there's a nail in my spaghetti. And sure enough, they inspect all of their individual plates and everything, and they had thrown like a bunch of nails and glass inside of the pot of spaghetti. So really intense stuff.
Yeah, if you're like, man, the police would never do that. I would first say, hey, go listen to our Fred Hampton episode.
Yeah,
but then if you're also gonna say that, that's the Chicago Police Department. The LAPD would never. The LAPD would.
They did it.
The LAPD. Yeah, the LAPD had a. We can go talk about the Rampart Division, and how they used to like it was a. Yeah.
60s was a crazy time because it was also when.
I'm talking about the 80s. Oh, yeah. Los Angeles. Like, they had. Yeah, the Rampart Division, they got gang task force. Used to, like, there's like a whole scandal about how they would. They had, like, people get awards for shooting black people and, like, gang members because it was like. It was. They were like a. Yeah. Yeah. So, like, it's. That's the 80s. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's so crazy, like, to think about the 60s, because it's commonly remembered and even romanticized as like, oh, free love and the Beatles and all this really cool shit. And it's like, yes, true, but also people were dying.
Yeah, it's weird because it's like, it is in like the black, I guess that's kind of, you can say, oh, that's a black thing, like black versus white. But then like, no, these people also loving and fucking, but like exactly, in between they're loving and fucking, they're getting murdered.
Yeah, it's a wild time.
Yeah.
Summer of 1968, the SNCC falls apart. Franklin Alexander, who I think was a leader or one of the top leaders of the SNCC, he had been arrested, and he got some bad press for being, quote-unquote, Maoist communist, even though he wasn't. Angela Davis says that he wasn't. And the leftist leaders are driven out of the organization, and then it collapses. Davis goes on to join the Che Lumumba Club, which is a black communist group in Los Angeles. She pays her dues, only like 50 cents, to become an official member of the Communist Party, which eventually raises a huge stink in the University of California, because now it's like, oh my God, there's a communist working at the school, you know? And like, what are we going to do about this communist working at the school?
Which is weird, at the University of California. Is this going to be at UCLA? Or is this going to be at Berkeley? Because I know she goes to work at Berkeley later.
I think it's UCLA.
Okay, UCLA. Okay, that makes more
sense. University Berkeley, of California. Yeah.
Berkeley's UCLA. Where they're fucking just over here just like, free love, man.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was like another issue because like Reagan was governor. He was a little...
State salary.
You had some guy up top throwing bows on this one. Not throwing bows. Like a... Across the table, throwing bows at you, I guess.
Reagan's whole shit, I did not know how bad of a motherfucker that dude was. And I didn't even understand. He got his bones, basically, as somebody who was like, would go to different factories on the behalf of companies and basically talk down, were like to give speeches against unionizing.
guys, you know me. I was in the movies.
I was basically.
You don't want to not take the advice of the guy on the big screen, now, dude. Yeah. I was in the movies, man. Come on.
Yeah, basically.
Oh well, I guess we should do what he says. Yeah. He's an actor, after all.
Exactly.
Cool. So January of 1969, there are more assassinations. Bunchy Carter and John Huggins of the BPP, they're shot on the UCLA campus by Ron Karenga's U.S. organization, as it turned out. But there are others later in the year. Fred Hampton is killed, obviously, in December of that same year. July.
Call us? It's like us. Although, is it U.S. or is it us?
I don't know. I think.
I want to believe it's us, because that does feel like us.
Us organization.
Okay. Maybe I could be wrong about that.
I'm not sure. I've also heard USO. I don't know if that's the same thing. I don't know what the USO is. Let me say that.
That's a very confusing. Because they're like, yo, we're the USO. You guys do shows for troops overseas?
Okay. Yeah. I don't know.
This sounds like a confusing organization.
July 1969, there's a conference in Oakland called by the Black Panther Party, and they invite white, black, and brown people to form a united front against fascism. And what they mean by fascism, it's kind of used interchangeably with racism, but Angela Davis also mentions that if they thought this was genuine fascism, and this is one of the things I think they talked about in the conference, is if it's genuine fascism that's going on in the U.S. right now, they should begin an armed struggle. Like, don't fuck around, you know? And so it was kind of figuring out what's the move from here, you know?
Prospects on armed struggle against the United States government are so low.
Not great. Like,
that's Fred Hampton shit. That shit really strikes true. That's where they want to play at. They mm-hmm. want to play on that level because mm-hmm. they are. It's like your cousins. Like, yeah, you want to play FIFA? You want to play FIFA? And you're like, why does he want to play FIFA so bad? He wants to play FIFA because he is he's a state champion FIFA level player. Like, he's amazing at it. That's why he wants to do it. He wants to beat you. So he's trying to drive you over. You don't play Mario Kart anymore.
You don't want to play Mario Kart anymore, man. Now you bring it back to my home. Now, I don't know FIFA. I know Mario Kart, all right? Yeah, I know getting my ass kicked. Yeah, you want to play Mario Kart? I just got it. I'm not that good. I'm still figuring it out. Bull fucking shit, all right?
Yeah.
Bullshit. Doesn't matter how many blue turtles I get, you're always going to win, all right?
Yeah, no, that's how the U.S. government feels about violence. that's our home court, dog.
Okay, they're going to kick your ass.
Yeah.
So Angela Davis, she goes to Cuba for a little bit, and she comes back to find that the university, again, maybe pressured, maybe like Governor Reagan's mandating this, or at least like pulling his strings, talking to people, doing his thing, you know, to ask whether or not, like, is she really a communist? Like, I'm not really sure. Like, are you really a communist? Like, what do you really want to take that stance publicly? And so the chancellor sends her a letter asking her if she is, and she unequivocally affirms it, like, yes. Do you have a problem with that? And there's like public outrage because the Cold War is going on. It's like, oh my God, she's a communist. We can't have this. And she's getting like hate letters and death threats start pouring into the school. But mm-hmm. Davis and her friends secure an injunction preventing the Board of Regents from firing her.
Yeah.
And this gets into the third and final phase of her life, which is persecution.
It's a... Yeah, it's weird because it's just like, yeah, man, what happened to free speech?
Like, what happened? There are lots like, of lots of strings put on free speech to begin with.
Yeah, like
First Amendment laws, its whole.
Well, even if it, I mean, this is like, of course, I
free
think
speech with
cases.
A big ass asterisk, you know.
Well, yeah, like you can't like your business. Like, if mm-hmm. you're, like, businesses can do whatever the fuck they want to do to you. Like, if you say mm-hmm. anything, like, that they don't like. But, like, this is, like, a state job. Mm-hmm. Like, the state literally can't. But, yeah, that's all. Yeah.
December 8th of 1969, the Black Panther headquarters are raided by the LAPD. And the Black Panther, there's basically, like, a shootout. Black Panthers are inside with guns trying to defend themselves from the police. And so... Angela Davis and her allies, they organize a community vigil, and eventually it gets to the point where it's like the police declare it an unlawful assembly, but then they get the idea like, oh, let's just move. If we stay on the move, like if we just keep moving and rotating, we're not technically an assembly, and so they can't, that all doesn't fall through. And then eventually the police just descend on the crowd with batons and clubs, and they learn later that this isn't just LAPD at this point. These are our SWAT guys. Some of them Vietnam vets.
The LAPD is wild. I think the police chief that they like have there for a long time, it's the police chief through the 80s, and like he gets elected in like this, like I think it's 1970, like right after this or something like this, mm-hmm. basically on the platform of just like, we're gonna protect like the Hollywood, like more rich parts, Bel Air. We're gonna protect you from the black people. That's basically like what he runs on and gets elected on.
Oh, he was elected, and that was his platform.
Yeah, that was like his thing. So it's like, yeah, no, L.A. at this time, it's like, people's like, oh, it's California, it's so cool. So, no.
It wasn't always.
I would argue still some parts.
That's what I was going to say next. It's like, I don't even know if it is still, you know what I mean? Yeah.
I'll tell you about a place called Orange County.
Okay. December 10th of 1969, there is a huge rally in protest to the raid, and a riot breaks out. Davis gives a speech in which she accuses the LA mayor and the chief of police with conspiring with the FBI to eradicate the Black Panther Party, which J. Edgar Hoover basically confirms a couple months after that. I mean, J. Edgar Hoover has been doing this. We talked about it in the last episode since since Garvey was in power, like 60 years ago. He's like 80 at this point, man.
You can basically look
still doing it, man. Still kicking.
J. Edgar Hoover's career as just being like, just walking around being like, there's too many black people conjugating on that corner over there. We got to break that up. Like, that is
all for me. Like, he made a career many. Out. He made a career out of that. Like,
it's like, just like, sir, that's a church. Is it a church?
I don't know. Is it a
church? Yeah. I don't think it's a church. You got to.
I don't think it's.
I don't like when black people talk to each other. Basically, is the whole platform. This whole FBI. That's what the FBI was doing for like literally.
Sir, they're organizing a bake sale. Like, are you sure that it's a bake sale?
Bake sale.
I don't know.
What is church? Church bake sale. C B C. Communist Brothers Committee. They call themselves brother.
Communist Brothers Committee. You know, church, CBS.
Yeah.
Communist Brothers. Suck. Yeah. Communist Brothers.
Look, let's get back to the fact.
Subverting. Communist Brothers subverting. Our Grand Republic. Boom. Unlawful
so
assembly.
You went so far off the thing. It's like so far off the bit that we were doing.
It happens, you know.
Yeah.
1970, Angela Davis begins organizing for the release of George Jackson, John Clutchett, and Fleeta Drumgo, who are collectively known as the Soledad Brothers. News that they had been indicted and were about to be sent to Soledad prison. They were charged with the murder of a guard in a different prison that they were in. Here's the thing about the charge and everything is that there was a fight in the prison yard in which a guard killed three black men, W.L. Nolan, Cleveland Edwards, and Alvin Miller, from a sniper tower. And it was like pretty well known and established fact that this guard was like really racist. And the jury ruled it a justifiable homicide. And then after that ruling, the guard was dumped over a rail and he fell to his death. Now, there's no evidence, as this is what Angela Davis is saying in her autobiography, there's no evidence that the Soledad brothers were the ones to do it, but they were known as militants, and so they were kind of like the perfect targets to point the finger at. And part of the work that she was doing was working with George Jackson's little brother, Jonathan Jackson, and she has been like writing letters to George Jackson and reads a copy of his book called Soledad Brother.
George Jackson is kind of like a known colloquially, I think, as the Malcolm X of prisons.
Mm.
So that's to give you like a key of like what type of like person he like to what type of level of stature he was in terms of some type of, you know, activist within prison.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know much about it, but I also know like I've read kind of sparingly what I was doing the Fred Hampton book, because Jeffrey Haas had some kind of connection to that story, about like the Black Gorilla Family, which is a prison gang now, I guess, which started as a Marxist organization in prison or something like that. Mm-hmm. It was like it has like some Marxist values. It'd be an interesting story to look at, but it seems a lot more complex than I had thought it was.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it. August 7th of 1970, they had been doing some organizing and like attending the trials of the Soledad brothers and everything. And on that date, there is what's called the Marin County Courthouse Revolt. And this is the inciting incident in which Jonathan Jackson, age 17, was killed, and also a judge. And basically what happens is like the trial's going on, and I don't even know. I think she mentioned that it wasn't even none of the Soledad brothers were being tried. It was like somebody else who may or may not have been affiliated. It was on some other shit.
Yeah.
And then Jonathan Jackson, basically he pulls out a carbine and takes the judge hostage.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
and the judge story. Gets killed, and like he gets shot, and maybe some others, and then this is like a big like oh shit moment where Angela Davis has to go underground because she's charged with murder, kidnapping, and conspiracy to, I think, free prisoners as well, and conspiracy to commit murder and kidnapping as well, and she's like, I gotta get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, he just like, I mean, it's kind of crazy because you see like. You have Jonathan Jackson who's just like, Doug, this is crazy. Y'all trying to send my brother for something he didn't do.
Yeah.
And you honestly like, and you already have, I guess, the feelings about like the entire society. And then you see this travesty being conducted. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you're like, you know how it goes most of the time. He's probably going to go to jail. And they're going to probably give him the death penalty for this. So just put that clip in that carbine. Mm-hmm. Let's get busy. But there's pretty much no way out of that. It's a suicide mission.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you're playing on like the U.S. government's.
Yeah, and that's the plan. You're playing Mario Kart, man.
Yeah, you're playing Mario Kart. They love violence, dog. They love violence.
Yep.
This is where I live, G.
Mm-hmm. August 13th of 1970, Angela Davis, she's gone underground at this point. The FBI is on a manhunt for her, a woman hunt, I guess. She's in New York.
Nice.
And she's running out of options. She has no money. All of their allies are under surveillance, and she's eventually arrested at a motel, sentenced to the New York House of Women's Detention, awaiting extradition to California. And at first they put her in the mental ward, and she said it was like worse than solitary to be surrounded by women who like clearly needed professional help. Like there was one of them who was like schizophrenic, and then another who was like a teenage girl who was like a heroin addict and going through just intense withdrawals. And she's like, they're all given Thorazine with their meals, which is like a tranquilizer. Mm-hmm. And she's also saying like the books that they have are just shit. Like their library sucks. It's all just like boring romance.
It's all just Cat in the Hat.
Yeah, man. It's just something like boring, smutty romance novels and like crappy crime dramas. You know, like Vince Flynn, like the Vince Flynn types.
Oh, Hardy Boys.
Hardy Boys. Just like, I don't want to read this shit.
It's all the books where Dr. Seuss was super hateful of Asian people.
Mm-hmm. all the ones they're pulling off the shelves. It's like that's what you've got to read, you know.
It's all like just the Hardy Boys is, bruh.
Or like
it was a weird time when people were. It was weird when people, yeah, as a kid, people would hand you Hardy Boys. You'd be like, I don't want that shit, dog. Fucking bullshit.
Man, I like to read. That was the thing. And I never read the Hardy Boys. I was like, I remember that moment where like somebody's like, oh, Hardy Boys. It's like, no, I'm going to read Goosebumps, bro.
Yeah.
Come on.
I don't want to. I want to read Animorphs or some shit. I don't want to read fucking the Hardy Boys.
Hardy Boys? What are you talking about, Hardy Boys? Get the fuck out of here.
Two niggas, two people in sweaters going around solving mysteries.
Ooh. Got a big flashlight on the cover, like, oh, they're investigating a train car. Ooh. On this cover, like, fucking Next. Come on, man.
I'm just telling you right now, Hardy Boys would have ran to the wrong people. They would have got murdered.
What?
They would, huh?
What'd you say?
I would say the Hardy Boys would have ran into the wrong people. They would definitely got murdered.
Oh, yeah. No, Hardy Boys.
Definitely got murdered.
No, they don't know what the fuck. They got lucky on every one of their goddamn little Hardy Boys. Get out of here. December 21st of 19, I'm sorry. She's eventually moved into the main prison population at the New York Woman's House of Detention. And she's talking with them about communism after one of the prisoner acts, and they're like, all right, you got to go back to solitary now. You can't fucking, you can't be doing that shit. Come on.
You can be organizing. Don't organize
organizing
here.
In the prison. You can none of that shit, right? December 21st of 1970, there's a huge protest on Greenwich Avenue spearheaded by the New York Committee to Free Angela Davis. And Angela's like shouting at them from her cell because it's like within sight of her, because eventually she gets moved back into like a different floor. And then shortly after that protest, she's extradited to California, imprisoned at the Marin County Jail, awaiting trial. And so they have the New York Committee to Free Angela Davis. That doesn't, like, I don't know if it morphs or if it just has the same name or a similar name. Mm-hmm. Then around this time is when the National United Committee to Free Angela Davis, or NUCFAD, NUCFAD, is formed.
It's a bad...
I don't know if anyone else calls it NUCFAD, but it's like I would call it NUCFAD.
I'm pretty sure the facility that she was in Marin was trash. It was bad prison. It's awful. But in Marin County, very very nice. Very nice. Extremely very nice. Wealthy.
I think she does mention, I think she mentions that. She's like, it was actually a lot cleaner than...
Marin is where Robin Williams, that's where he was living before he committed suicide. It's like a very wealthy place. I think it's one of the wealthiest zip codes in the country, in the world. Also, where Tupac is, like, where Tupac, like, spent, like, his time when he was, like, kind of, like, when he moved to the West Coast from Baltimore, he lived in Marin County. It was, like, in like, a project, like, up on, like, a hill where he could look down and see all the rich people.
Hey, I guess the higher taxes in California, they buy you better jails, better prisons.
Them jails in California are kind of wild. They're just letting people not out now because it's overcrowding. Like, constitutionally can't.
All right, cool. Right on.
They literally cannot have any more people in these jails. Look, it is fucking insane. Yeah, no, California's prisons are insane. They're some of the nastiest, craziest shit.
I believe it.
It's like all racial, just immediately racial. It's a whole thing. Well, I think most prisons are, but I don't know.
Yeah. August 3rd of 1971, Angela Davis's defense team appeals to the grand jury indictment against her. They say that basically the reason she had been convicted was due to racism, and the jury was like not representative of the population, and maybe the judge helped select a jury that was going to be biased based on his own class preferences and everything. Yeah. And so I think they seek for like a retrial. And the prosecution, while Angela Davis is in prison, they had been seeking the death penalty for her. But while she's awaiting trial in California, the California Supreme Court abolishes the death penalty, which then undercuts the judge's decision to deny her bail because she was accused of a capital crime. And so now that the death penalty is no longer on the table, the crime isn't technically capital, and so she should get bail, right?
It's a weird thing where, like, in the 60s and early 70s, late 60s, you have like a lot of these prosecutors and legal officials operating in like this incredibly corrupt way, in the same way they've always been operating. But then now it's like, and it's like completely obvious. But then now, like in that time, there's like these like slivers of like liberal judges and like people who are just like, who will get these cases and be like, no, you can't. What the fuck is this? Like, and you get them every now and then to be like, what?
Absolutely not. Are you kidding me? Like, who let this happen? What the fuck is the law? You know?
And then they'd be like, who tried this case before? Mm-hmm. Oh, Judge Smith. Yeah, that guy's a dick.
Yeah, he fucking sucks.
Yeah, he sucks. Yeah, he sucks.
What's funny, they were also like trying to change the venue and everything and like, you know, pushing for like, oh, where do you want to go? Where should we angle for? And it's like San Francisco.
Yeah.
Francisco. We want to get tried in San Fran.
Which is even we're going to
get off there.
Because San Fran is like going through like, San Fran still has like a little like conservative element to it. Like, you know, that's a Harvey Milk story, which we're going to get to later, about like how San Francisco is changing in itself. And it's, yeah, San Francisco it's interesting. A lot of places are interesting.
So late February of 1972, Angela Davis is granted bail. The judges change his mind, not necessarily due to the argument that the death penalty is abolished, but rather due to like overwhelming public pressure. They got a bunch of letters that were like, what the fuck are you doing? Please just give her bail. And she got bail because a white farmer from Fresno County put up his property for her bail, because like they didn't really have a whole lot of money. And then there was just this farmer in Fresno who was like, I'll put my farm on the line.
Come on, allies, solidarity. Exactly, mm-hmm. That's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
Fresno, look at you. Last good thing to happen in Fresno.
I don't know anything about Fresno.
It is. Everybody's like, yo, California's so dope. And it's like, no, there's not a lot of it.
Not all of it.
Yeah, a lot of it.
I assume oranges. I hear Fresno, I think oranges.
They got oranges, but it's like, it's rough. It's rough in Fresno to Temecula. All I forgot what they call it, like the valley or whatever that shit is over there. Yeah, it's a lot.
Then March of 1972, the surviving two Soledad brothers are acquitted because George Jackson had died, I think, in the same month, like earlier in March of 72, and then in late March 72, the surviving two brothers are acquitted. Prosecutor Albert Harris, getting into Angela Davis's trial, his argument is rooted in Davis's quote-unquote boundless and all-consuming passion for George Jackson, that she was persuaded, she was in love, and so that's why she got involved, wrangled into this conspiracy to commit murder. And Angela is a co-counsel.
His basic idea, his basic whole premise as a prosecutor just basically like, her lady parts
exactly
wanted this. Like
that, her lady all. Parts were a Twitter, yeah, a that's Robin his, for George that's Jackson. Whole, and that's why she needed to do this.
He went because, to law school and that's mm-hmm. what he came up with.
They're too like, emotional. You know, you can't trip the two emotions governed yeah. by emotion. It's like,
yeah.
okay.
Yeah.
That's the point that Angela Davis attacks him on. She's a co-counsel, and when she's talking to the jury, she's like, Albert Harris would like to take advantage of the fact that I am a woman, for in this society, women are supposed to act only in accordance with the dictates of their emotions and passions. Yeah. And like she mentioned in her autobiography that she says this, and the like women on the jury, like white and black, are just like, yeah.
Yeah.
We're like, with you, you know?
While this dude comes, like the prosecutor comes over like, don't listen to her. Would any of you ladies like a nap? Like, I know you're tired, and you know.
Don't you have some coupon cutting to yeah, do, darling? Yeah, if you're yeah. since you're shopping so much, yeah, you know, like yeah, who let lot. This guy be a prostitute?
Yeah, who let this guy? he's a standout prosecutor.
He's just like, a stand-up.
Like, he's the best. That's why
he's the best guy we had to do it in Fresno. Yeah. You know, he's the only guy we could find. So they're awaiting the verdict, and while they're awaiting a verdict, the final like kind of crazy incident that happens, there's a plane hijacking out of Seattle mm-hmm. by four black men, and like Angela Davis is with her team at a restaurant, I think, and an FBI agent tells them, or communicates to them, maybe through somebody else, that they had landed in a San Francisco airport, mm-hmm. and they demanded that Angela Davis get on the airstrip in a red dress with a briefcase with $500,000 inside. So just basically like the plot of a Quentin Tarantino yeah. movie.
Like
you know what I mean?
A bad Quentin,
yeah. one of his early ones when he was yeah. just kind of getting, or maybe one of his later ones when yeah. he's just, you know, a used up old jizz sock. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
All right.
The plane lands in Oakland, and then the real story of the hijacking comes out, and basically it has like nothing to do with Angela Davis.
Yeah.
The FBI was kind of just throwing shit at the wall, seeing that's, if maybe that the news would get out about this and that maybe the jury would find her guilty yeah. if this happened, you know.
That's the
if
thing
their
about
version of this happened.
That's the FBI's whole plan, my dog. Mm-hmm. If they just do mm-hmm. that shit where they just throw shit at the wall.
Throw it at the wall, man.
And it's the FBI and the CIA. They just throw shit at the wall, but then at the same time, they're incredibly deadly and effective.
Let's see what happens, yeah. man. Let's just figure it out, man. You know, trial and error. It's all R&D, isn't it?
You got to think about the FBI and the CIA as like your projects in science class. There's mm-hmm. just two guys there who are just goofing off. But there's one guy who is literally doing all the work.
Who's really good. He's really, really good. He got picked on too much. And yeah. now he's got a vendetta against the really world. Good. And he's gonna put poison in your toothpaste, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
June 6th of 1972, Angela Davis is found not guilty. And this is where her autobiography ends. Because, like I said, she wrote it in 1974, and she's still alive. Yeah. She is currently a professor at the University of California, Berkeley, and she's written a bunch of books on various topics such as feminism, prison reform, or prison abolition, yeah. like racial issues, of course, and solidarity with Palestine. As far as, like, her latest activity, I looked into some of it, and she said, I think in a Guardian article, she's quoted to have said about the George Floyd protest, she was encouraged because, quote, we've never witnessed sustained demonstrations of this size that are so diverse, end quote. And, you know, we talked a lot about her autobiography. It is good. If you decided to listen to this mm-hmm. instead of read it, which, you know, you should still read it because we obviously didn't cover anything or all of it, you know. Yeah. But if you don't want to read her autobiography, read one of her other books. Like, see what she's about.
Yeah, man. That was good. That's our podcast on Angela Davis, guys. Who do we have next week? Who do we have next week?
Next week we are looking at
Let's clap for Angela Davis. I don't know. Let's clap for Angela Davis. Who do we have next week, Henry?
Next week, we're looking at a similar story about a socialist woman who fought and stood up for what she believed in. We're looking at the life of Dolores Ibárruri, or as they call her, La Pasionaria.
You gotta say it, and you gotta say it, and you have to whisper it. So let's, ooh, we're gonna get into that 1930s fucking Spanish Civil War vibe. Let's do it quietly.
La Pasionaria.
Come on, dog. Come on, dog. I'm excited for this story because I only know
it's pretty. It's pretty crazy. The Spanish Civil War. I knew nothing about it, and there's a lot going on.
I'm excited in that, like, I know Spanish War simply through the guise of Spanish Civil War through the guise of adventure seekers, basically, mm-hmm. from the U.S. I watched the Waltons.
Hemingway.
You know? Do you know the show The Waltons?
Uh-uh.
It's a show. It's about a family in Virginia who's like an Appalachian family. That's the theme song. They survived the 30s, and then John Boy, who is like the main, like the oldest son, goes off to fight in the Spanish Civil War. Which is like
just a lot of people just getting their kicks.
And yeah, getting their kicks
off. Country tears itself apart.
Passionate struggle over capital, over capital against fascism,
mm-hmm.
against fucking real life fascism, where the Nazis perfected their bombing
air
strategy.
Techniques.
Yeah, and like Luftwaffe got a lot of restraint again. But guys, thank you for listening to this episode. We hope you come back for the next episode about Lost mm-hmm. Pasionaria. Thank you for listening to this episode about Angela Davis. We hope that you follow us on all our social media, of course. HFH Podcast on Twitter, Hardfire History on Instagram, YouTube, on Facebook. And guys, we want to thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. Okay? All right. Peace.